You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
All right. Welcome to the Berkeley Local Show, Episode 7. I'm your host, Steve Johnson, small business owner, Berkeley resident, and chamber member. And this show is sponsored by the Berkeley Chamber. And we got two great guests on Episode 7, or second, I guess, of our online Zoom podcast that we're doing. I got two great business owners. Why don't we start with you, John, and then April, you can introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is John Morrell. I'm the manager of Armadillo Printwear in Berkeley. We do custom t-shirts and embroidery and design work as well. We recently started doing merch stores for people who want to have some kind of online presence selling merchandise and things like that. It works great for restaurants, schools, teams, that whole thing. I've been working for the company for about 15 years now, kind of fresh out of high school is when I started at there. And I kind of just, you know, run the show now. I've been kind of in the management position for about 10 years now. We had that hole that needed to be filled, and that was my job. So I just kind of took over there. I do a lot of design work as well. Anything the company needs, like I kind of do that. I do a lot of the face to face with customers, a lot of the interaction, via email and telephone as well. So, Armadillo's been around for 28 years now. Yeah.
Okay. Hold on. You answered 15 different questions I had written down on your introduction.
I try to be very prepared for everything, which is funny because I tend to procrastinate for a lot of other stuff.
You're cracking me up. Now, John and I obviously know each other. John's the screen printer for my business, Motor City Brew Tours. So I could joke a little bit with him there. Well, April, why don't you introduce yourself, and then we'll give John a chance later to tell us the other five questions I still had left there. Go through that. So.
Well, I'm April McCrum, and I am the owner, along with my husband, of Catching Fireflies and Yellow Door Art Market. Catching Fireflies has been around since 2000, and Yellow Door Art Market since 2010.
Okay, great. See, that's how you do it, John.
Yeah, I have a tendency to be very long-winded.
That's all right. I appreciate it both. I appreciate both kind of introductions. And from being someone who's been a sales and marketing guy and a tour guide and I've been a professor, I'm kind of used to it at all angles. I've definitely dated people in my past, like before I was married, that would definitely want to tap me on the shoulder, cause I would be nonstop talking for 10 minutes and be like, where's the pause button on that guy? Right. Where's the pause button. Right. We all have a tendency to do that, cause we're all excited about what we're doing, which makes me excited. Yeah. So I'm excited to have both of you guys on. Your two businesses that I frequent a lot. We'll kind of start with you, April. I mean, you started really before you started Catching Fireflies, you were designing your own cards. Am I correct?
Yeah, more probably photo frames and scrapbooks and things of that nature. So yeah, I was doing a lot of art shows and local, craft markets and whatnot. Probably since when I was in college, basically. Yeah.
Okay.
Started wholesaling. And that sort of, we had people come to our house and working at our house, and that lasted for about 2 months before we realized this is not going to work. So we rented the space in Berkeley, and the back half of it was our studio where we made all of the things I designed. And the front half was all my stuff, plus a lot of my other artist friends. Because I was just mid-20s. The goal was, when we opened that store, is for the little store park to pay for rent. That was our big high goal.
That's a good goal, though. I like that.
Right. So yeah, that's how it all began.
Okay. John, so I'm trying to go back to the 15 questions you answered fast there. So you started right out of high school in the screen printing business?
I learned how to screen print in high school. I had teachers who knew I was a musician, and they were musicians always need t-shirts for their bands and things like that. So
that's how I got into screen printing. I totally agree. Was into skating and that whole little culture.
Yeah. And they kind of pushed me in that direction, and they were like, you should check this out. I think you'd be really into it. And I really latched onto the process. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And I was 19. Yeah. I was 19 when I started working at Armadillo, and I basically just walked in and was like, hey, are you hiring? And the owner, Dave, was like, not really, but why do you want to work here? And I was like, well, I really like printing shirts. And I showed him a shirt I was wearing that I had printed. He's like, all right, well, why don't you come back tomorrow and we'll see how this works out. And then, the rest is kind of history from there. So, but, I did go to Wayne State for art. I have a bachelor's of fine arts with a focus in drawing. And that's
okay.
I've been drawing since I was a very small child. My mom has pictures of, all my old drawings and everything. And so art's always been huge for me. And so this is just another way for me to kind of extend that aspect of my life into a career as well. So
you could take your love of art and put it on anything, basically.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah.
So that being said, April, so you got a feel for it by going to art fairs and kind of seeing the circuit, so to speak, of other crafters. And that gave you kind of a taste for if I could maybe run a store and put a lot of cool stuff in it from my crafter friends. Was that kind of the premise?
Ironically, I never really had like this big dream to be a shop owner. I thought, wow, that's a lot of work to manage all that, and a lot of risk. And so it is sort of funny how I sort of stepped into this sort of almost backwards, just for the need. Because when we decided we needed a place to make our stuff, because I was wholesaling my product to other stores, we had two routes. We could go just pure industrial and just rent a space where it's not pretty. You're just in there making stuff. Or like the retail aspect. But, to be honest, it was more of a conservative choice, because I thought, well, with the retail aspect, we have opportunity to make more money, by selling things. And I had a pretty good network of friends that lent me stuff on consignment, because to open a store is no joke. I mean, you have to buy all the inventory and it's a huge investment. So this was sort of a baby step way to get into it. And it turned out over the years, the store portion of my business grew almost, more than the wholesale. And now I don't even have wholesale anymore. So it's
really
sort of like how that all sort of, went in order there.
It's funny that I've run my tour business for over 10 years. And the initial premise of the business was to just take people to breweries by bus. And now I do walk, boat, bicycle. Bicycles last year was 40% of the business, when we still had business. And other opportunities kind of came out of that weren't in what you'd call the business plan, right? Like when people always, when you're in small business incubator programs, or you're talking to other business owners, they always want to talk about the business plan, or folks in big companies want to tell you about your business plan all the time. And I always say that a lot of times you start in one place, and then it can go in a totally different direction based on the opportunities that you see kind of coming your way. And that's really what's happened for you, hasn't it, April?
Totally, totally. Yeah. And then we sort of just, built on each of that. We've never taken a loan out. We've always just, as our business grew, we would open another location, or, do a new business concept like Yellow Door. So, yeah. So we've just slowly grown that way.
John, So you guys have two locations for Armadillo Printware. You're in Berkeley, just down the road from April's two stores.
Yep.
And then you're also at the Detroit Shipping Company. Kind of what drove you to want to set up shop downtown Detroit?
Well, it helps that we actually had a friend. We know the owners of the Detroit Shipping Company. The owner of Armadillo and one of the owners from Shipping Company actually played soccer together, so they had that connection. And he approached us and asked, like, hey, is this something you guys be interested in maybe exploring, a different concept of screen printing on site, in a retail location? And we kind of thought about it. And Dave asked me, he's like, what do you guys, what do you think? And he asked one of the other managers, like, what kind of thoughts we had about being downtown? And we felt like, having gone to school at Wayne State with, my other manager and I both went to Wayne. We were like, Detroit's up and coming. It's a great place to be. A lot of, young, hip people are
down. A lot of energy.
Yeah, a lot of energy, doing lots of really cool stuff. And I was like, it would be a good presence for us to have to be down there at least, and at least just kind of try it out and see how it goes. And so for the past couple of years, prior to everything shutting down, obviously, like, we were operating a 7x20-foot shipping container screen printing unit. And it was essentially set up as a t-shirt shop where people could come in and they would choose designs that we had up on the wall, and we would print them for them on the spot right then and there. It was a very different concept. You're used to going to, like, Oakland Mall even, and seeing people heat press photos on like t-shirts and things like that and mugs and all that kind of stuff. And we weren't quite doing that. You know, these were set designs. You couldn't really get what exactly what you wanted right away, but it was more or less like a promotion outlet for the shipping company itself and for us as a company to be like, hey, we do screen printing. We can do this for your event on site here at the shipping company. If, you know, you hold a private event here, like we're available. So it was a definite shift in business model. And it's not the first time we shifted business models too. The owner started the shop based on doing tie-dyes. Like he was just doing custom tie-dyes.
Tie-dyes. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Back in 92, go figure. And then it became the sort of thing where he was.
Yeah, that was like the epicenter of tie-dyes, wasn't it? Back in 92.
And he had people demanding, you know, the demand for custom printed tie-dyes became the thing. And so he was like, well, I already know how to screen print because he had learned that. And he, you know, his job in college was screen printing. And so he decided like, okay, let's kind of transition to doing this. And then the custom screen printing is kind of just what took over. And then there was demand for embroidery. So we started embroidering. So it kind of, we've kind of gone with all the ebbs and flows.
Everyone can see that.
Yeah.
That embroidery was done. So sorry.
Yeah, no, you're good. It's
no one else will be able to see that because this will be an audio only podcast, but you guys get to see that. So.
For sure. But that's all, we kind of, every time there's been that demand of something new, we've been able to kind of hopefully fill that niche and become something different and help us expand our skill set to accommodate whatever customers need. So we pride ourselves in being able to be pretty
adaptable.
Yeah. Adaptable. Yeah. That's a good word for it.
So in terms of being adaptable, April, so your other concept, besides having three awesome Catching Firefly stores, you have Yellow Dome Market, probably where I've shopped maybe even more at times. Can you kind of describe that to folks and, you know, what the premise of Yellow Door was and what it is today?
Yeah, I was inspired by similar concepts. So we took a little vacation in Asheville, and I feel like in that area that you saw a lot more of sort of those co-op-esque, you know, type places where, you know, each artist or crafter is responsible for their own little space. And I'm like, wow, that is cool. And Linda's Dance Works was, you know, empty for a long time next to us. I'm like, wow, that is like a nice blank canvas if you wanted to sort of build it out and create like this sort of ongoing artist market. And I sort of like surveyed some of my, because I have a lot of connections with people in the art and craft world, and sort of surveyed them like, you know, if this was the rent and this is how the setup would be and da-da-da, would you be interested in that? And I got a lot of positive response. So we went ahead and moved forward with it. And it, you know, just was a very different business model. So we make our money there essentially from the artist paying rent. We only take 15% of the sales there. But I mean, the cool thing about the artist, you know, is, you know, they're limited to art fairs and online sales. This is like another, you know, venue where 7 days a week, their stuff can be available. And most of it is primarily Metro Detroit local, but we do have some other, you know, artists over Michigan that can, they can ship, you know, come as often to restock, but and also it's their own brand identity too, you know. And you can be in consignment in another shop, but your stuff might be more scattered about and you don't have a presence. But when you know, and this is sort of retail 101, when you dedicate like a solid presence of something in one space, you're just going to sell it more, you know, because it stands out, you know. So it gives artists another opportunity to, you know, grow their business.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. My wife and I love, it's walking distance from my house, both of your Berkeley shops. So it's fun for us to walk through there, and that's become our gift giving shop between there and Catching Fireflies. And I really now more than ever in the climate we're in terms of supporting artists, I'd say I've probably gone through a slight amount of withdrawal of being able to walk in there and look at stuff and touch and feel it. It's not quite always the same as looking at their online stores and things like that, all of which you give them that opportunity as well with Yellow Door, which is great. But I also like the fact that you carried books. You carried my book for a while. Did you know that?
Oh, maybe. I mean, my mother dealt with a lot of that. So
that was a couple of years ago. So don't worry about it. It was a couple of years ago. And I wrote the book, Detroit Beer, A History of Brewing in the Motor City.
Oh, cool.
And my wife was on one of the ladies' night out events or girls' night out events. And she was with a couple of her girlfriends. And I think one of them, which was also one of my tour guides, made some comment to one of your shop folks like, hey, you sell books. You should have this book. And it was pretty funny. So anyway, I like got hounded by my wife and friends, like, you need to go back into Yellow Door and like show them your book. So we had that in there for, I don't remember, maybe a year and a half or so until it kind of went through its time frame. What a nice outlet for it. I did not do that really anywhere else, but that was a good way to do it. I mainly sold my book online and at events, like a lot of artists would do. If being at craft shows, I would run speaking engagements at libraries, bars, breweries, wherever, and then sell the books at the end of it, right? But I love the Yellow Door model in that respect. That it, so at any given time, you have about 70-ish.
Yeah, exactly. And they and then, you know, is you know, so, sometimes the artists that were really successful at first, sometimes over the years, maybe the interest wanes a little bit just because maybe you saturated the market and then they move on to something else, but it also opens up another spot for somebody else to move in. It'll be very interesting moving forward to see what this looks like for us, considering a lot of the art shows are like canceled this year. So a lot of artists are really sort of handcuffed on what their options are going to be to market themselves, you know?
Yeah, it's really, I you got to wonder how many of them were really like pushing up their supply of what they had finished with the assumption they were going to go into their season getting to sell a lot.
Yeah, it's a very interesting year coming ahead of us.
So, John, interesting product shifts as we've kind of gone into this COVID-19 lockdown. You guys are selling masks just like April's selling masks, although yours are a little different than hers, but you're both in the same business then in that respect. So, like, tell me how that kind of came about with your suppliers, John, and then how you shifted and said, we're going to start offering this, like, right away, a screen-printed mask.
Sure. Yeah. The basically when Michigan kind of shut everything down, it gave us the opportunity at the shop to start to try and become more efficient with our processes. And in doing so, we saw all of the t-shirt companies kind of started shifting to having masks cut from their product. We knew there was in some news that had gone out that said like Hanes jerseys, Fruit of the Loom, like those brands were going to start producing masks for frontline workers because of the shortage. In doing that, we also knew that, you know, the average person who was going out in public, if you went out in public at that time, you were starting to see masks start become more common. So we saw one of the biggest producers of the fashion t-shirts, Bella Canvas is the name of the brand. They decided they were going to start cutting like super affordable one-time use disposable masks, and they were doing them by the millions, and they were able to laser cut them without touching them. Like no human hands have touched these things. They're literally fed on a machine into bags and polybagged and shipped to customers. And in those guys releasing that mask to the public for us to buy wholesale, we decided like, okay, like, you know, we can provide these masks to people and they seem to be pretty easy to handle and pretty affordable. So we're able to screen print on them, which kind of negates the whole, like, you know, them being sanitized and not touched by human hands. But, you know, we try to be as clean as possible at the shop. You know, we've implemented like hand washing techniques and hand sanitizers and making sure everybody's like healthy and as they show up to work. But it became the sort of thing where like, as these were starting to come out, I started seeing more demand for them come through my emails. And we've basically shifted, you know, I have a customer who does a lot of sales to, he's a salesman for like yacht owners. And a lot of the yacht owners have crews that they need to outfit on their boats. And so they were buying specific masks for those guys. And then we decided like, okay, we're going to do this too, but we're going to offer these in like, you know, in a manner that's not only like cost effective for us, but like for the average consumer to come in and get them, because we work with a lot of restaurants. We work with, you know, other different shops and things like that. So it's very helpful to be able to sell these masks at such a price that when somebody comes to these stores or these restaurants and doesn't have a mask, the idea would be that the restaurant or the establishment can provide them with the mask, which encourages them to not walk away from the store because they're being told they're not allowed in, but it gives them the opportunity to walk in the store and say, I don't have a mask. Do you have one? The mask, you know, is then handed right to them. They put it on there and they can walk away with that mask. It's cheap enough, you know, like a dollar or two or whatever, depending on the quantity that you're purchasing them, which, you know, it adds up. Yes. But at the same time, like you're, instead of you turning someone away, you're giving them an opportunity to come into the store, despite the fact that, like, you know, you want to give the perception that you're willing to work with the people instead of telling them like they're not allowed to come in. So,
right.
It's been a big shift for us, and all of the t-shirt brands are starting to provide these masks too. So we're going to start seeing like different cuts of masks coming out. We're going to see different colors and designs. It's going to be like the new fashion thing. Like these kids that are going to go back to school in the fall are probably all going to want a mask that matches like every single outfit that they have. You know, it's something that we're starting to see more and more of too. So
then April, are you kind of seeing the same thing, and you guys are offering more designer masks, more do-it-yourself crafters made these masks and they got cool patterns to them? You've kind of already jumped into that, correct?
Yeah, well, you know, Assoon is sort of funny. I was out to dinner with one of my friends right at the cusp of all this happening, and we're like, what's going to happen? And I'm like, she's like, yo, will you just wait another month and maybe selling whimsical masks? I'm like, ah, ha, ha. And here I am a month later selling whimsical masks.
Right.
I saw, you know, a lot of when they sort of made it more of a mandatory, or that's what it was. The CDC recommended, like, hey, we recommend that you start. So then I follow a lot of different artists and crafters online too. And I saw one making them already. I'm like, hey, would you be interested in hosting these? I would love to provide these, you know, because it's going to be a need, you know. So once again, you're just trying to be savvy and quick thinking when, you know, things are turned upside down. That's a benefit of being a small business. You can pivot pretty quick if you need to, you know. You don't need to go through all these, you know, steps. I'm like, hey, we can make this happen. Plus, if it's a mission.
You don't have to go through five different committees to figure that out.
Right. We're like, we're going to make this happen. So yeah. So I got in touch with one maker in West Michigan. She's providing all the Catchy Fireflies masks that we're selling. And then I also reached out to a number of different yellow door artists that already work in fiber, making either purses or little, you know, creatures or whatever. I know they're handy with in fabric. I'm like, hey, this is an opportunity for you guys to really, you know, provide an essential need for our customers, as well as, you know, a benefit they can support local. I mean, so they're supporting us as a store and also supporting you as an artist. And that makes people feel good, you know, to be able to, if they're spending, you know, a certain amount of money on a mask, they're also doing good to help their local community too. So it's
been for both of you, that totally makes sense. There's kind of different needs on both sides of this, right? My friend shared something on Facebook the other day, and it was a link to someone who had all these Simpsons character design masks. And I'll bet you they had 50 different ones, right? And my friend and I are big Simpsons fans, and it was like a fan site, right? And all they did was take what you're doing, John. They took those masks, and then they had all these different designs that they may or may not have gotten approved, you know, through the Fox people with the Simpsons characters on them. But I think we're going to see more of that on kind of both sides, you know, as a direct result of what's going on here. That totally makes sense. It's so interesting that we're even talking about this. This wouldn't have normally been in my notes to talk about your businesses and like in this respect, but we're all small business owners that need to be nimble and think things through differently. Right. Definitely. And we can do that when we're at this size. April, you made a good point of saying that there. John, another thing you guys are doing that's helping other small business owners be a bit more nimble is what you alluded to kind of in your intro is you guys have created merch stores for other small business owners. Can you kind of talk through that process of how that works for people who may not really understand what that means?
Sure. So for instance, if you are a young entrepreneur who's trying to launch a clothing brand, or if you're a restaurant who's looking to fundraise for your employees who currently can't come to work because of the COVID-19 crisis, the merch stores are a great avenue for that sort of thing, where you choose the product and you select, you know, if you have a couple different designs you want to offer, that's cool. If you have issues with choosing product, I'm more than happy to assist you with that process of picking out what sort of items you want to offer. And basically, like, we will go ahead and set up a web store for you that all you have to do is send the link to your people and make sure they go to it and visit it and start purchasing stuff to help you out in your organization. And essentially, it's hands off. You don't do anything. We collect all the orders. We handle all the money, all the credit card processing, everything. You let us know what sort of percentage you want to make on the back end of things that's incorporated in the retail price that the customers are paying for. And then, you know, when the store closes, we usually keep them open for about 2 weeks to kind of process everything and have orders come in. And then we close the store and we collect everything and separate it out, order all the product and produce it on demand. That way there's no overhead. We're not producing a giant bulk of stuff to have in a warehouse because we don't have a warehouse. We're a mom and pop shop here in town, you know? So we try to be able to provide this sort of service to people who really need it. It works really well for any sort of team, or, you know, we've done a lot for the schools. I have a few of the elementary schools right now in town are running web stores with us. I've got a couple of high schools out in Novi that are handling web stores for their seniors who didn't get to graduate, but they wanted t-shirts, but the parents didn't know how to get the shirts. So we decided to make them web stores.
And that's a great idea. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah. So it kind of, again, being able to adapt and fill these holes that, you know, that have shown up, like we're still trying to provide for everybody. And the web stores are a great avenue for that sort of thing. And even I had a couple of customers who are doing work at home programs, and they want to offer to their employees, like, you know, a package of clothing that, you know, like sweatpants and like pajama tops and things like that. They want to have the company logo put on for when they're sitting in like a meeting, they're comfortable, but it still advertises the company, like
right.
That sort of things available. You know, there are so many different options, and it just opens up this whole, you know, avenue of income for the organization. And it keeps us printing shirts, which is what we want. You know, we want to keep our employees, you know, on the clock too, and working and getting paid and everything. So it's, you know, you can't operate a business without the income. So it helps anybody who wants to start a store, and it helps us as the people involved with it to keep rolling. So
what a great idea.
Yeah.
April, let's talk a bit about something we're unfortunately not getting to do this year, but I know that you're involved in it, and that's the Berkeley Art Bash. Can I tell me how you first kind of got involved in that in Berkeley, and we'll get excited about having it for next year.
Yeah, right. Well, I was on the chamber originally, but there was a gal named Maureen Monte, and she was like a photographer at the time in downtown Berkeley, and she had this idea to put this art fair together. I'm like, oh, I'm happy to help you. Yada yada yada. I mean, I was always spinning lots of plates. I'm like, I don't need one more thing to deal with. But I'm like, I'll help you out a little bit. And so she sort of, you know, did it the first couple of years. I mean, the very first year was like on the side streets, you know, wasn't even on, you know, 12 Mile. And then maybe that was for a couple of years. And then she ended up, you know, going off the chamber. And then, I, you know, miraculously, it's like, oh, you're such a good fit. You know, I'm like, I know. So then I helped take it over and just, you know, once again, advertise it, get, you know, quality artists in there and sort of grow over the years. And it's a really good community volunteer project for me because it's so in sync with everything that I do. And I clearly benefit from it, you know, from my stores as well. So I've been happy to do it. And that's sort of my volunteer aspect of downtown Berkeley.
Well, that's quite a big volunteer aspect of downtown Berkeley. You make it sound like it's so easy. But it is one of the reasons that 4.5 years ago, I bought a house. My wife and I bought a house and moved here. Wow. It was going to Berkeley Art Bash, going to the Dream Cruise Parade, the Cruise Fest, and events like those. And we saw that nice, smaller community feel that we noticed out of those that were like, wow, this is where we want to live. And then like the first summer that we got to live here and we got to walk up and enjoy Art Bash so casually, like we just walked from our house and walked up there and your store is kind of right in the epicenter of it in a perfect location for it. And you obviously bring out a lot of like closeout stuff and you got all that laid out there and your staff is always so well at it. It really is a great event. I really, it's a bummer that things, the way they've timed with construction, the fact that it was going to be moved because of construction anyhow. And the fact of the COVID stuff that has made it be canceled for this year, but I definitely look forward to it next year. Like how great of an event that is.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And we do look forward to each year, but I mean, it actually, it's not, since we have, it would be odd having a couple weeks earlier. I mean, that was our only option. I mean, so for all this to happen, I'm like, it's not that, I mean, you know, it's not that bad of a year for this to all happen. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of agree. So talk about some other interesting events that you guys have. Lots of different, I don't want to say just promotions, but like fun things you're doing between the Catching Firefly stores and occasionally with Yellow Door. Kind of talk through some of the regular promotions and fun events that you hold occasionally when your stores are normally open.
Yeah. I mean, well, we've really benefited from the DDA and their Girls Night Out, you know, so we always participate in those kind of events that they offer. And those have really, grown over the years, and we've really benefited from that. And in the past too, the DDA also did like those sort of art and about, you know, things with live music. And I know they're sort of in transition mode with a lot of that stuff, but that was delightful. I felt like we were doing events like every other week. I was like, oh my goodness, we can't keep up with all this.
The first couple of years I was living here, I definitely felt that way. I was like, every time my wife's like, we're going out shopping tonight, I'm like, didn't we just do that like a couple of weeks ago? I don't understand. She's like, I'll get you a drink somewhere if you come out. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was really cool. The DDA did a lot of that stuff. And then we do our normal birthday sales and things of that nature, you know? So, I mean, I'm not like, we just sort of roll with what the city offers. I'm not, I mean, I do some charity stuff too, in terms of like, I'm trying to think like different, you know, events that, you know, benefit that, but for the most part, we sort of roll with what the city deals with us too. And that keeps us pretty busy actually. So
that's a good thing. That's why we're all here trying to work together in that way.
Right.
The last couple girls night out, I actually get set up and I do a beer tasting at my chiropractor's office. So Nova Chiropractic on Coolidge. And him and I were just talking. He's like, would you come in and like set up at a table? And I'm like, sure, why not? Right. And what a fun incentive that people are coming in thinking they're getting like a free neck massage. And then I'm handing them some samples of something.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's like a good way for like a business like mine. That's really a service business that doesn't have a storefront to kind of get to interact with folks in a different way. And also like tell people what I do.
Yeah.
It's always a good thing. Like anytime we can all collaborate in those ways is a lot of fun, I think. John, let's talk a bit about other types of things people wouldn't think of for screen printing. Like I saw another thing on your site that I wouldn't have thought of, which was like landscaper contractor specials for screen printing.
Oh yeah. I mean, we try to figure out what sort of, obviously the landscaper contractor special came up because the industry was starting to open back up. People were starting to go back to work. Specifically, landscapers were allowed to start cutting lawns again. And my landscapers, I have several that I work with. I love all of them dearly. They're fantastic customers. They're very regular, which is what you want out of a customer. They're coming back once, sometimes three times a year, depending on how busy their season is. So you get some of these guys who come in that, they want to get t-shirts for the summer, maybe some tank tops, and then they want to get hoodies and sweatshirts and zip ups and hats and beanies and things for the winter. So it's, they're a great customer to have because that's the sort of thing you want people to keep coming back for more as a business. So, we created a couple of specials online where, if you're a landscaper or a contractor, it's a great opportunity to get some shirts on your crew for the season. And you can add on hats if you'd like for an affordable price. And there's a few different options of, the basic 100% cotton shirts or very popular lately are the performance 100% polyester shirts, which, they keep the moisture wicking properties to, make sure your guys stay dry and they're not sweating.
How could you not be always using those kinds of shirts? I don't see how you could even use cotton shirts anymore if you were a contractor.
Having worked in this business for as long as I have, I'm kind of a t-shirt snob.
Like, yeah, I know you're a snob about it.
but I have good reason behind it. I personally only wear American Apparel shirts, and there's a few reasons behind that. One, I love the way they fit. I love the way they feel. They're super soft. They hold their color longer than most other shirts do, so they've got really good dye fastness to them. And the main thing is they're USA made. I want to support local as best I can. They're out of California, so it's not that local, but it's a lot closer than Honduras or like wherever else they're making shirts. So I really like American Apparel product, but all of the t-shirt companies have started making the 100% polyester or at least some kind of 50-50 blend that it has moisture wicking properties. So it's a very popular thing to have that sort of shirt on because, it's nobody, I don't think anybody really likes sweating necessarily. I'm in my bungalow upstairs right now and it's pretty hot up here. So I'm starting to sweat, but I'm also wearing a sweatshirt, which is dumb on my part, but
maybe it's because you got those crazy headphones on or something.
Yeah, it could be that, but it's, the different specials that we come up with, we try to come up with a few of them year round just to, spur up business and make sure people know that we're here. We don't do a ton of advertising necessarily. We're very word of mouth. And I mean, for a business that's been around for 28 years, I think we've done a pretty good job. Definitely like working locally with the community and the schools and, the public safety department, parks and rec. I mean, we want to be a part of all of that too. And that having that presence has helped us grow just because those people who were involved in those things are the ones who are going out and saying, hey, I got a t-shirt guy. When somebody says, I want to get shirts made, being the first name on someone's list of who to go to is always a plus.
Yeah. I mean, I get hit up from lots of screen printers running a tour and events company for years.
Oh, I'm sure.
And it was always like, everyone's always got someone. There's lots of people who do it, but I kind of researched this a little bit. It just kind of worked well. One, that you're in Berkeley, and two, you guys had a long history. And then lo and behold, you guys are pretty cool. So that's kind of
cool. I like to think we're pretty cool.
Yeah, right. April, someone else who I think is cool. Let's talk about working with other, John alluded to this too, like working with American made or Michigan made types of crafters, whether it's, with your Yellow Door store or with Catching Fireflies, as you think through your product mix in there, And you add it, you have lots of great, you know, Michigan products, right? What's some of your decision process in doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess over the years, I have sort of honed my buying skills in terms of what I think will sell or not. So I'm always going to art shows, you know, usually all summer long. You know, number one, look for, you know, talent for art, the Art Bash, and also look for talent for Yellow Door. And then also possibly even wholesaling for Catching Fireflies, you know, so just depending on what people are offering. So I'm always in the hunt for that because it helps tell a better story. I mean, when people shop with us, they're not shopping at Target, you know, so they want to know the story behind the product. And if we can share that, that's more meaningful gift, you know, because people come, I mean, they buy stuff for themselves too, but most people are buying gifts. When you buy a gift, it's nice to have an additional story that's attached to that. And the fact that you're, you know, even double supporting local, that's the thing about Yellow Door. It's like you're supporting two levels of local, which is pretty amazing. So, but another great is sourcing it too. Like here's another story from the COVID factor. I was dialing around, you know, this, you've seen a lot of like these keys out here, just, you don't touch, you know, keypads or, you know, or screen right. Door handles. And I was Googling around and I found a guy called a Cootie Key. He's actually sort of a germaphobe.
I saw that on your website.
Yeah. He made it like three or four years ago, you know, more for bathrooms in that sense, you know, but then he's just like cashing in like a wildcat right now with the whole situation. But I contacted him and he's like, oh yeah, I totally go, you know, and I literally emailed him just randomly like Sunday night, like this is a few weeks ago. He's like, how many tomorrow? I'm like, this is crazy. And we sold like hundreds of these cookies. It's crazy. So once again, I mean, it's sort of a fast turnaround. You're supporting somebody that's clever. He invented this and they're actually made in Michigan. So it's that kind of stuff. And people feel even better buying it, you know? So anyway, so those are fun little success stories behind that.
Oh, I love hearing that. It's funny. You said Cootie Key, and then I realized I wrote it down in my notes. And as I was kind of lurching over to the side, I'm like, that's right. I wrote Cootie on there. And I said, need to ask about that. Like, what's that all about? Right.
Yeah. People were buying them like by the tens and, you know, 15s for all their friends and whatnot. So anyways, it's cool though. And it is a tool that is helpful to you, especially, I mean, in this day and age that we're living in. Right. So,
you know, I think some of us did stuff like that anyhow on how we opened up doors at times and just never really put it to a product.
Right.
I think I have at times and maybe I just unconsciously did it. And now it's like, you're really thinking about it or you're rethinking what you touch.
Yeah.
At least for the short term or for the next year, maybe you're kind of thinking that way.
For sure.
So John, let's talk about this whole podcast setup you got here. So okay. Let's talk about your other podcast. Let's give a little shout out to that, right?
Sure. Sure. I have a video game podcast called the Midwest Game Nerds Podcast. It's part of the Midwest Podcast Network, which is a network that my brother and I started years ago, probably about 5 or 6 at this point. And it's just something we, you know, it's a basement podcast, you know, I suppose. We don't really podcast in basements anymore just because everything with COVID has us doing it all remotely. But, you know, my video game podcast is just gaming. We talk about games. It's myself, my brother, one of my other really good friends, and we sit down and we talk about all the recent releases in video games. It's something that the three of us were all super passionate about because I grew up with a very technological family and my dad sat us down with an Atari 2600 and was like, here, play this when we were kids. And so we always had some kind of technology around us and video games were the thing that we all latched onto. And it's been a lot of fun to podcast and just kind of share that with other people. We've got all kinds of games that we talk about on a regular basis. And then there's all the new stuff that comes out and every once in a while we'll do like some retro things, but it's something that we've been doing. I think that we're in our fourth year now of doing this podcast. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. Okay. That in the podcast world, that would make you a veteran for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, prior to that, my brother was running the Midwest Film Nerds podcast, which he no longer does because going to movies was becoming super expensive because they were literally going, him and his friends were going every single week.
Oh, wow.
You know, he was racking up all those ticket stubs and he decided to put that one to rest because as you get older, you start getting a little busier and things don't necessarily have all that free time. So he kind of called quits with that, but focused more of his attention on the game nerds. And we've got a Westworld podcast that we've done as well called Westworld FM. He's got a show called The Alienist Recap Podcast for the show The Alienist on AMC, I believe.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's on AMC.
Yeah. Okay. So, and he's, you know, it's something he really enjoys doing. It's, and as a musician for me, like and being, you know, attracted to audio and art and everything like that. It was something my brother and I kind of bonded over too, was being able to like talk about like how to set up recording equipment and everything and learn how to use it properly.
Because really, when you started 4 years ago, it's not as streamlined the podcast process as it is today.
Right.
Like you didn't have places like, say, Podcast Detroit, where we'd normally be taping the show, and now we're taping out of Dave's basement of Podcast Detroit, but we're all doing this remote, right?
Right.
But there was a time when you needed all that equipment. I can count. I've probably been on a dozen beer podcasts where I was in someone's basement and they had this crazy setup of equipment.
Yeah.
And then I could tell you some funny stories of me being in like some funny, funky basements where we're down there drinking and talk about beer. And it'd be like some standoff to see who could make it the longest on the show before someone had to get up and pee, because you were drinking for like a couple hours. And I can remember being on one called the Brew Bubbas, and that's what those guys did. And they were big guys, right? And we were down there, and we were definitely 2 hours into talking. And somewhere in there, I thought my face was turning green or something, because I was just like, I got to get up and pee. Like, how can you guys not have to stop the show to get up and pee? Like, that's amazing, you know? And that was the big joke. Like, I didn't even know. It was like a contest, I guess, that I wasn't aware of.
Right.
Doing the show, but. Fun. I thought those were really fun. It was the whole grassroots of interacting with people that were like super geeks of the craft beer world and home brewing. And just like you with gaming, you know, it's whatever your passion.
I mean, there's a podcast for everything. I mean, there's screen printing podcasts, and trust me, I listen to them. Like, it's part of being in the business. If it's something you're really passionate about, there's probably a podcast about it.
Do you have any podcasts, April, that you listen to? Is that something that you do to learn about stuff?
I, you know, there's a bazillion out there too, but I haven't. I have a kindergartner who's keeping me quite busy these days.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Anytime. Yeah. It's between work and that. Yeah. It keeps me pretty busy.
Okay. That I get, right? That totally makes sense. Or the fact that you have three Catching Firefly stores and Yellow Door Market, that might keep you busy too, maybe?
A little bit. Yeah.
A little bit. Right. Well, I want to thank both you guys for coming on today. This was a great discussion of two similar businesses in different ways, because you're both selling masks, right? And you're both small businesses in Berkeley, and you're both on 12 Mile. Yeah. So how awesome is that? I want to thank you for giving me some of your time. John, if people want to get more information about Armadillo Printwear, where should they go?
They can go to goarmadillo.com. That's goarmadillo.com. I spell that out because most people spell it wrong. So I just want to make sure that's nice and clear.
As I was writing your name down in my notes, I had to slow it down in my head so that I spelled it correctly. And April, if folks want to get more information about Catching Fireflies or Yellow Door Market, where should they go?
Yep. We both have the websites for both of those too, catchingfireflies.com and yellowdoorartmarket.com. And we started recently selling actually some things online at Yellow Door as well. We're trying to sort of make that happen, considering that, you know, we can't open our doors right now.
So for both of your businesses, for everyone listening to the show today, I want you to go check out Armadillo, Yellow Door, and Catching Fireflies, and support all the artists and support small business in Berkeley. This is the end of this show, episode 7. We look forward to coming back in June with two more great Berkeley businesses. But I want to thank John and April for coming on the podcast today. I want to thank the Berkeley Chamber for producing the show. And I want to thank the Berkeley DDA for sponsoring all this. We've been having a lot of fun on these, getting to know local businesses. And you can go to berkeleychamber.com to get links to this show. Or check out Berkeley Local on any of your podcast platforms to subscribe to the show and listen to all the episodes, including this one. So I want to thank you guys both for coming on.